Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:06 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is June 22nd. And we saw that the dollar was weaker in here today and Wall Street was firmer. But Europe was weaker, more likely on the back of the fact that the respective currencies were stronger. And then I think people are starting to price in the fact that this massive source of liquidity infusion that has helped to support markets is going to have the knock-on effect of weakening the dollar. So then we also had in the UK the fact that the Bank of England came out and said that they are going to try and reduce the size of their balance sheet before they raise interest rates. Now that's an about turn from what they had said previously. They had said that they would be raising interest rates first and then trying to reduce the size of the balance sheet. What it really starts to suggest is that the Bank of England is worried about inflation and the potential for the massive increase in the size of their balance sheet to create inflation as a recovery begins to take hold. And that is something that every central bank is going to have to deal with, because when the velocity of money collapses, like it did with the lockdowns, it's an extraordinarily artificial scenario, because outside of an enforced lockdown like we had just recently, there is practically no other conceivable way that the global economy could be shut down in such an effective manner. Even in wartime, domestic economies would be working overtime on a war front. The only other potential way you could do it is to drop an asteroid somewhere in the ocean. So, I mean, like, these are extraordinary types of scenarios. It's led to an extraordinary response. And when velocity of money does start to pick back up, then we are going to potentially have an inflationary outcome, because there is so much money sloshing around, and when it starts to move around the system again, well, it's going to start sloshing over the edge, and the result is inflation. Well, obviously, therefore, the Bank of England is beginning to think about how they can combat that risk, and reducing the size of their balance sheet is obviously one of those potential outcomes. Now, the Federal Reserve has not said anything to that effect, and William Dudley was interviewed today saying that he thinks the size of the Fed's balance sheet is going to go up to $10 trillion. Well, the knock-on effect from any of that is that the USA is now responsible for more than half of all the liquidity being provided internationally. And therefore, that is likely to put pressure on the dollar. So the pound was up by about a cent in here today. The most important thing is that it is continuing to hold the 120 area. Now, it did pull back from the region of the trend mean last week, but this sort of firming action is the first potential sign that we're seeing another higher reaction low. And if it holds and we see the rate trading back above the trend mean, not only will it suggest that we're getting some additional strength in the pound, but also that investors are beginning to look elsewhere for value outside of the dollar. And we had a similar upward dynamic today in the Australian dollar. So when we look at how that has been performing, it is back above the trend mean. It is stabilizing around the 68 cent level. But more important than that, it is now in the process of breaking a more than 2-year downtrend. And when we look at more history, we can see that the Australian dollar is one of the best performing currencies in a commodity bull market. It doubled versus the dollar between 2001 and 2011. And a doubling in a currency greatly flatters the potential return for international investors. The other currency that did particularly well in the last commodity bull market was the Brazilian real, and it has collapsed over the course of the last decade, but it is worth just paying attention to the fact that in the run up in commodities, and of course it's shown inversely here, it went from 4 to 1.5 in the commodity bull market that began in the early 2000s. Now, we are a bit of a ways from concluding that this is the beginning of a new bull market in the Brazilian real, and not least because it is one of the countries that has been most heavily hit by the coronavirus, and the restriction of supply of commodities coming out of Brazil in response to the difficult environment that they're currently engaged or having to deal with there is one of the supporting elements on the commodity prices generally. But the reality here is that it is more likely than not we are going to have an infrastructure-led boom, and that is positive for commodities. One of the primary conditions for a commodity-led boom is demand, and infrastructure development is at the top of the list for many of the fiscal stimulus measures that are being proposed globally. This is less about building China as it is about rebuilding much of the decaying infrastructure in the West and then building a lot of infrastructure in places like India and Africa. So that is, I think, one of the potential sources of new demand. Then we have supply. There hasn't been a lot of investment in new mine supply over the course of the last decade, and there is a reluctance to go out and borrow a lot of money. In fact, there is a reluctance both on the side of the mining companies to borrow and the banks to lend. So that will inhibit the ability of some of these companies to increase supply by a significant margin. But then you also have to factor in the consideration that if the dollar is going to decline, then that is beneficial for liquidity conditions in emerging markets. When you have a weak dollar, it generally tends to create a much more liquid environment in emerging markets. They have been pummeled over the course of the last 3 or 4 years with the strength of the US dollar, and the substantial amount of US dollar denominated debt that has accumulated represents a milestone around the necks of a lot of the emerging market economies. Well, if the dollar starts to trend downwards, which I think is more likely than not at this stage, and we've had a rebound to unwind some of the oversold condition over the course of the last 2 weeks, there is the potential that today's downward dynamic is, and it just about fulfills the key reversal characteristics, because it did move to an incremental new high, closed below the low of the previous day. So it is a key reversal. It's not an especially large one. Downside follow-through tomorrow would certainly help to lend support to the view that this is a short-term peak for the dollar. But it is certainly looking that way, that that investors are beginning to consider that the US dollar is not the best place to have a lot of currency piled up. And the continued strength of Wall Street is no longer on the back of a strong dollar. It is now depending more and more on the weakness of the currency. Well, the Nasdaq has really quite admirably bounced from the 9,500 level. It's continued to hold the sequence of higher reaction lows, and it has been a clear example of outperformance. And it is pushing on now to new all-time highs. Following the kind of pullback that we saw in March, it's quite normal to see that we get a pullback in consolidation, and that has not happened in the Nasdaq. So we have gone from the very deep oversold accelerated decline, which offered one buying opportunity, skipped the second one, which would be the consolidation, and now onto the third one, which has been a very mild consolidation in the region of the peak, and now it looks like it's breaking on the upside once more. The reliance of the market on the supply of liquidity is even more exaggerated today than it was back in 2018. It's worth reminding ourselves that we had a significant pullback at the beginning of 2018, and all the way through the rest of the year, the Federal Reserve continued to raise interest rates. Then we had the seizing up of the repo market and a more pronounced pullback. And that came back into the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and we had a very significant rebound, consolidation in the region of the peak, and then a significant breakout. But by this stage already, we had had the changing of the monetary policy arrangement in the Federal Reserve. They had moved on from quantitative tightening to, now what they have is quantitative easing once more. That's only part of the equation. The fact is that because of the seizing up of the repo market, the Federal Reserve is now engaged in a, or has pretty much imposed a de facto standing repo facility. And regardless of whether they have announced it as such or not, the reality is the same, that whenever there is going to be a problem with liquidity in the repo market in future, the Federal Reserve will step in with unlimited supplies of liquidity. And that gives, or that I guess puts unlimited liability onto the Federal Reserve. So when they talk about the size of the Fed's balance sheet going from about $7 to $10 trillion, that's obviously significant, but it's nothing compared to the size of the repo market and the global money markets, because now the Federal Reserve is the de facto central bank to the world. And that is one of the, I guess, the jobs that comes with having the reserve currency, that the rest of the world is completely reliant on using it, and the reserve currency producer has to produce as much of it as is required. And it is that source of liquidity is helping to support asset prices. So the Nasdaq continues to push on the upside. The Philadelphia Semiconductors Index has just about broken out, and it's certainly steadying here in the region of the psychological 2000. The FANG index has also retained its relative strength. Now, I think one of the more, I guess, interesting charts overall is Apple, because previously it had had a rather rhythmic process over the course of the last 8 years, has been its ability to range and subsequently break out. And it has done that on at least four occasions where we've had really quite lengthy ranges, and they have lasted anything up to 18 months, and subsequently it has pushed on the upside. Now, the most recent is very short. It's only in the space of about 2 months. And even on a logarithmic scale chart, coming up off the lows in 2003, this is now an acceleration of the trend on a log scale chart. So forget about the fact that it's starting to accelerate in an arithmetic scale chart. It is also evident on the log scale chart, and this is emblematic of the kind of moves that we're seeing in the largest companies in the world. They now represent significant proportions of the overall market in terms of their weighting, but also in terms of the market cap of the whole index that they represent. And this kind of acceleration is very much in tune with the massive infusion of liquidity, but also the third psychological perception stage of the bull market. There is nobody can tell us when and to what to just how far these accelerations are going to go. But one thing that is quite clear is that having had the very big pullback and the subsequent move on to new highs, emphasis has been further concentrated on a small number of shares. The reliance on liquidity is even higher than it was before. There is a tendency to simply think that stocks can't go down, that these stocks represent something completely different, that this time it really is different, and they can go up significantly. Eventually, we'll see loss of momentum, we'll see topping activity, and we haven't quite seen that yet. And most particularly, we also know that bull markets don't end of old age. They end because central banks assassinate them. And the Federal Reserve tried to do that with its quantitative tightening process. They tried to take some of the steam out of the economy following the massive fiscal stimulus that the Trump administration introduced. That has now completely gone out the window. We are in a period of massive monetary and fiscal stimulus. That's a huge amount of liquidity entering the market, and prices are likely to continue to rise as long as the sea of liquidity, the tide of liquidity, continues to rise. And therefore, this will accelerated trends are the easiest time to make money if you're long. And the conversion process to from caution to absolute mania and the belief that stocks can never fall, then that is a conversion process that takes some time. And a bull market relies on successive waves of new investors coming in ever greater numbers to continue to push up prices. And with the amount of liquidity that's flowing around, then certainly that is helping to support asset prices. Of course, the fact that bond yields are so low, anyone who wants to hedge has to be looking at something other than bonds, not least because the traditional relationships based upon yield and volatility are a little out of whack right now. Well, gold prices are really quite steady, right at the upper side of the range over the last 2 to 3 months, and have been consolidating below the $1,800 area now for a while. On the last three occasions that it got up to that level, it did so on a rather accelerated basis and pulled back in a dynamic manner. This time it does look better supported overall. And the clear willingness of central banks everywhere to do anything possible to create an inflationary outcome in the economy, because they are absolutely terrified of deflation. And with core CPI figures where they are today, they will do anything to ensure that inflation is something that will come back into the economy. Well, that in the short term is beneficial for gold, because it is degrading the purchasing power of fiat currencies. Now, when we look at individual stock markets, then the Eurostoxx index was in negative territory today, but it is in the region of the trend mean. It's a natural area where we can anticipate some resistance. Some people will obviously be looking at the relative performance of the Nasdaq compared to other indices, and the Russell, for example, was in positive territory in here today, and it has at least held the sequence of higher reaction lows. And so far, this might be a somewhat larger reaction, but we still have the sequence of ranges one above another. And as long as the low is holding, then this is still a recovery scenario. The kinds of indices we've seen that have in fact had these somewhat lengthier ranges are the utility index and transportation index. They've been pretty much range bound now for about 2 months, and in the region as well of the 200-day moving average. So we can certainly also very clearly highlight the commonality that we have in just about all of the European indices, where they are just about all trading below their respective trend means, but still hold the ranges one above another and the sequence of higher reaction lows since the lows back in March. But they are underperforming the Nasdaq, the gold market, the biotech market and some of the commodities, because these are where we have the clearest evidence of a return to outright demand dominance. And that's also where we have the clearest, I think, bullish arguments. There is a clear narrative for why some of these sectors should be outperforming, whereas we still have a lot of open questions about the ability of the transportation sector to recover, how many of the companies will survive, which ones will be most heavily impaired, and which will come out stronger. These are all very big questions. There will obviously be some that will do much better than others, but then, of course, there will also be others that do much worse, and those are at acute risk of default eventually. I do think it is perhaps time to start looking more at emerging markets for the simple reason that the dollar is declining. The Jakarta Composite pulled back extremely violently, and it is slowly but surely starting to recover. But the nominal price appreciation, I think, is shaded by the fact that the currency has stabilized very significantly and recouped all of the decline put in during the panicky period in February and March. So I think these are some of the considerations that we are starting to see that emerging market currencies are stabilizing, and we are seeing some evidence that they are quite capable of steadying beyond the short term. The Philippine peso has been rallying for a year and a half already. Even when we look at some of the most heavily export-dependent currencies, the Taiwan dollar has been steadying for about 8 to 9 months and has now just about unwound all of its decline. Then the Japanese yen is still very range-bound. It has been rather inert over the course of the last while. Now, we certainly have this clear sequence of lower rally highs for the US dollar, so there is a general pattern of the Japanese yen strengthening. But when we look at the second section index, it has continued to rebound and it is now back above its trend mean. It is pushing back up into the overhead trading range, and this is a rather bullish outcome that having unwound the oversold condition, it is now improving upon it. And that does hold out the prospect of additional strength in the Nikkei, provided we don't see very dynamic moves in the Japanese yen versus the dollar overall. I think the big takeaway here is that it's looking increasingly likely that the dollar is going to be a weaker currency. Now, the Chinese probably have some ideas about that, and they certainly don't want to see their currency strengthening in a dynamic manner. So it is now strengthening towards the 7 level. They've been defending that area for most of the year. So the big question is now whether they will be willing to allow the renminbi to strengthen through 7, and how it is doing versus the euro is probably going to be a deciding factor there, because the euro strengthened rather impressively today, and I think that it is looking increasingly likely that the euro is going to break out against the renminbi. And since Europe and China have got a much closer trading relationship than the USA and China do, then they are likely to put some pressure on China as well to help to strengthen their currency, to strengthen its currency. Now, that's a big question with regard to the renminbi, because China is still dealing with the aftermath of the coronavirus and the damage that it did to the domestic economy. When we start to think about everything we've learned about the coronavirus so far, there was an interesting article by Michael Lewis about the way that genetics is now being used to trace the mutations in the virus, that what would have cost $10,000 in 2002 when they tried to do it with SARS is now a penny a test. And that compression in costs is going to greatly enhance the ability to actively trace cases and to figure out exactly how and where the greatest risks of contracting the disease are. And it does suggest that over the coming months, we're going to have a much more intelligent way of avoiding contact with the coronavirus. And it means that lockdowns are unlikely to be put back in place in the West. That is on top of the fact that we know now that it is much less fatal than originally thought of. But obviously there's going to be a very big campaign to get everyone the flu vaccine so that it'll be easier to differentiate between patients. But what it does suggest is that we are probably going to be able to get more on top of the cases as this situation evolves. But that consumer confidence is going to lag that, and monetary policy will lag consumer confidence. So we're still likely to have a great deal of additional stimulus coming through, and that is supportive of asset prices, but most particularly those that are benefiting from the current situation. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.